Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, Kate Meissner and Nicole Schwann Jr. discuss their contributions to The Sentences That Create Us, Crafting a Writer's Life in Prison. They are joined by Alicia Brown. The following conversation originally took place May 15th, 2022, and was recorded live at the American Writers Festival.
Hello, everyone. My name is Noelle Velasco, and I'm one of the program coordinators at the American Writers Museum. I'd like to welcome you all to this program of the American Writers Festival, celebrating the past, present, and future of American writing. At the AWM, we believe great writing comes from everywhere in this country, and that everyone has the ability to take authorship of their own experience. This program explores writing insights for creating and sustaining literary life in prison with contributions from people who have been incarcerated and their allies. The Sentences That Create Us highlights vibrant work from inside the prison system. And here to talk about it are editor Kate Meissner and contributor Nicole Schwann Jr. Kate Meissner, the director of prison and justice writing at PEN America, she has taught, consulted, and co-created extensively for over 15 years across a wide spectrum of communities with a focus on prisons, public schools, and college classrooms at the New School and the City College of New York. In 2017, Meissner re-envisioned the concept of book tour for her illustrated poetry collection, Let It Die Hungry, pairing public speaking engagements with opportunities to work with incarcerated writers across the United States. Nicole Schwann Jr. is the Deputy Director of Prison and Justice Writing at PEN America. They founded Roots, Wounds, Words, an organization that provides BIPOC-led and centered literary arts pedagogy, publication, and performance opportunities. They served as Editor-in-Chief of Black Femme Collective and on the editorial teams at Women's Studies Quarterly of the Feminist Press and Slice Magazine. They're joined for this discussion by restorative justice practitioner Alicia Brown of the Liberation Library, a volunteer-run and abolitionist organization that sends books to young people in Illinois prison and jails. Welcome to you all.
Thank you all for being here with us today. I'm going to start off with a little poem I wrote about my experience when I was incarcerated, and I was pregnant at the time, and then we're going to jump right into it. So this poem is called Head Up, Alicia. Head up, Alicia. Fast lane. Mind, body, and soul lost. Thoughts? Seems like I don't have those. Turn up, slow down. Turn up, slow down. Liquor kept me from having a frown. Head up, Alicia. Take is all I knew. Even if driving is all I had to do. You're under investigation for an armed rob. Words barked at me, stars is all I could see. 72 hours went past. Brown, why aren't you eating? You're pregnant, I was asked. You're being charged with armed what? Head up, Alicia. Cook County, 26 in Cal. The smell inside was so foul. I'll be in here for a couple hours, as if I had any powers. For sure I'll get let off the hook. $50,000 deed bond, my freedom is what they just took. The judge had no sympathy, couldn't even give me no empathy. The words that followed just echoed. Authority, please let it go. Will I be handcuffed as I'm having ultrasounds, regular doctor appointments? Hell, will I be handcuffed as I'm having my babies? They totally don't give a F that we're still ladies. Head up, Alicia. Dreaming I'm in jail. Wake up, I'm really in hell. Praying my twins won't be born in this place. Females surrounding me, all carrying a little one. Only difference with me, I'm carrying one plus one. I swear I'm done after this. If I ever get out to give them a kiss. Head up, Alicia. Brown, pack it up. I damn near threw my cup. Am I going home? The CO put down the phone. Don't come back. I promise to stay on track. Tears flowing down my mom's eyes. I'm so sorry, Mom. I'm sorry for all the lies. Whisper to my 4-month pregnant belly. I'll be the best mom to you babies forever and ever. I won't see this place again, never. Head is up, Alicia. Thank you all. Appreciate you all. So I want to give this chance to for Nicole and Case to tell us a little bit more about the book.
Thank you, Alicia. When Alicia told us that she wrote a poem, we were like, oh, you're going to open our panel. Thank you so much for that. It's nice to see all the folks in the room today. My name is Kate. Forgive or work with me on this hoarse voice I woke up with today. I hope it makes me sound cooler than I am. And just to set you in the context of what we're talking about today, I thought that we should open with some readings from the book. It's a really unique book. It's called The Sentences That Create Us, Crafting a Writer's Life in Prison. I happen to be the editor. And I'll let this clip of my intro do some of the stage setting before I hand it to Nicole. I arrived at Pen America in 2018 with a background of facilitating poetry workshops inside jails, prisons, juvenile detention centers, and reentry programs. While I loved the experience of communing with fellow writers, I often became frustrated by the hard-drawn boundaries baked into the carceral setting. It was an ethical conundrum. Crossing those lines would mean jeopardizing the vibrant arts program I taught through, but the work produced behind the walls, the generous, searching, and intelligent writing I was privy to each week deserved a wider readership. Though its prison audience was an important one, I felt sure it wasn't the only one, not by a long shot. Coming into the role of leading Pen America's prison and justice writing programs offered the opportunity to collaborate directly with the country's most hidden but creatively hungry talent. It felt liberating to meet as a peer with those interested in the same delight and rigor of literary life that I participate in and aspire to, rather than as a teacher bound to the one-note institutional power dynamic of civilian and inmate. Here I was indeed affirmed to discover a diverse and active world of writers in prison, many of whom were completely unaware of the others in their widespread community. The first year we compiled anthologies for the Penn Prison Writing Contest, it was satisfying to receive letters from contributors who tucked in thoughtful notes about one another's work. On more than one occasion, writers expressed how impressed they were with the quality of their peers' work. Writers who had felt for years profoundly alone in their struggle were both angered and comforted to see right there in print just a glimpse of this vast landscape. There were others, many others in prisons across the United States standing up against the same risks and threats. Underneath the underground lived another people-powered movement with no central leader, incarcerated writers reshaping the course of their lives and maybe even the world through the use of words. I pictured them all kneeling at the edge of the earth to set their messages in bottles a sail. Through the stacks of mail marked prison writing that arrive at Pen America's office each day, for those that don't know, there's no internet in prison, I also learned that not unlike the value of literacy in the outside world, there are a million reasons to write while incarcerated. The polishing of skills necessary for effective legal work and grievance writing, letters to loved ones that punctuate through the doldrums of repetitive days, the desire to self-reflect and make sense of a complex past, a healthy outlet to let off steam and wrestle with a fraught emotional life, and of course more. Writing, whether or not professionalized, can be a mighty tool that wields great power. In prison, I learned it can be a matter of life and death, not just in spiritual terms, but often literal too. So the book goes through three sections, just to set the stage. It goes through foundations of creative writing, crafting a writer's life in prison, first-person narrative essays about how people have done extraordinary things through the walls without the resources and tools that those of us writing on the outside have. And the final chapter is on building writing community within prison, and then it ends on outside of prison for folks coming home. And that's where Nicole's essay is in the book. And I'm gonna let you talk about it, Nicole.
Good afternoon, everyone. How y'all doing? It's really good to be in community with you all and in conversation with both Alicia and Kate about sentences. This book is profound, and I'm not saying that because I'm in it, a contributor, or because I'm the deputy of Pen America's Prison and Justice Writing Program. I'm saying that because I've seen its extraordinary impact on the communities that I work with, and because it has had an extraordinary impact on me as a writer. So I'll just read the first paragraph, maybe two, of my essay. It's called Remix the Plan, Return to the Purpose, so that we can jump into a robust conversation. Remix the Plan, Return to the Purpose. The waiting room was cramped. Self-care bulletins, hotline advertisements, and glossy Department of Probation postings were taped on its screen walls. In slanted cursive, a post-it cautioned, "Please note, NYC Department of Probation POs work 7 days per week. Any departmental representative may, can, visit your home, employment, program, school, or family member's home. Thanks." Wide-legged and cross-armed, a young man slumped into a seat beneath the warning. Across the room, another's eyes were closed. His head hung low as he napped. Next to him, a young woman cupped her cheek with a palm, sculpted nails pressing into her hair. Just under a dozen storytellers sat in the waiting room of the New York City Department of Probation's Bed-Stuy office. They were there to participate in the first session of a 10-week writing program that probation hired me to facilitate. By the looks of it, no one gave a shit about who I was or what I had to say. The incentive worked. The storytellers were there because attending the class absolved them from reporting to their respective POs each week. Let's jump into it.
Thank you. Thank you, Case and Nicole. And I want to rewind a little back and tell a little about what I, you know, how I tie in, how I we felt like I tied in into this book. So I'm a part of AFSC, and AFSC is basically a youth justice organization, and I've been doing focus groups in the youth prisons. And through that, that's where Liberation Library comes in. Liberation Library, as stated before, sends books to incarcerated youth across Illinois. And we've been sending out these quarterly newsletters just around the time of COVID. The youth have little to no movement, as usual. They have no programming. They, you know, not seeing anyone at all. So we've been sending in these newsletters quarterly for them to just see different topics that's going on right now. We have a lot of submissions from them, so they become published writers and, you know, stuff like that. And another hat I wear is Circles and Ciphers. I'm part of a restorative justice organization. I want to shout out my twin sister that's here. She's the ED at Circles and Ciphers. And they basically do healing circles around hip-hop. So I think when talking to Nicole and Kate, we brought back how writing is a form of power. So all these organizations that I'm talking about gets youth to be creative about how their healing is and how they can write. So I want to go back to Nicole and ask the question is, how do you treat writing?
I treat writing as a professional endeavor. I also treat it as a spiritual practice. It is a way for me to, and it's also therapeutic, it's a way for me to express all of the emotions, right? And if we're speaking specifically in the context of being justice involved, writing was the thing that brought me back to realizing, acknowledging, understanding my humanity, right? Not only was I a felon, but also, you know, I was someone's daughter. I had dreams, aspirations. I came from a specific environment, right? I have people who love me. I have people I love. When you are caught up into the vice grip of the criminal justice system, you forget that you are a human being, that you have humanity, right? What is indoctrinated into you is that you are just a criminal, you know, you're just a felon. Writing brought me back to remembering who I was before I pled guilty, who I was prior to my indictment, as well as it enabled me to speculate who I wanted to become, not despite of, or despite, but also in light of my felony, embracing that as being a part of who I am, right? So that's what I mean when I say it's therapy, but it's also spiritual grounding, and it's also professional endeavor. I teach writing because I understand its transformative and restorative power. And so for me, writing is a way also of connection, right? Of saying,
I'm not alone, but also, Alicia, you ain't alone. You know, and the 2 million people who are incarcerated aren't alone, and the other 2 million plus people who are on community supervision, probation, parole, you know, state control, they're not alone. We have stories to tell.
Facts. Thank you. That was beautiful. And I definitely agree. And I want to bring it back to Kate's. And I think in the discussion, we were talking about when we briefly talked, what was the moment you decided to write this book?
Well, I edited it, so there's 50 contributors. So there was a couple moments, I think. There wasn't one singular. When I came into Pen America, the former director who had been there for 20 years, the program was very small and grassroots, said to me, I think you should rewrite the handbook for writers in prison. You seem to have a different pedagogy than we do. You could do something else with it. And I said, oh, that's an interesting idea. The handbook for writers in prison, I really respected it. When I taught in prisons, I would always make sure my students had it. I was amazed that it would go for free to folks in prison across the country. It's a very slim volume with some, you know, the real basics of how to write. Very proud of that history and resource, but it was inadequate because I thought, what is this offer that's not just a straight craft book? There are plenty of straight craft books. How do you make a book that's responsive to the needs of folks inside, written by folks who are or who have been inside largely, not completely, but largely? And so that was the first moment. And then I gave it a year on the job. And as we were going through the mail, I started to understand that people were not just wanting to know how to write a poem or an essay. They were like, what does it mean to be a writer? How do I get an agent? How do you get published? What is that? You know, can you imagine no internet trying to figure out how to get published? What are the best practices for writing? How do I be in community with people? And so cataloging all of those questions that were coming up that we didn't have answers to, because I don't have answers. None of us have straight answers as writers, right? We know there's a million different paths. So all of those questions started to inform who needs to write in this book, what do we need to show, and how do we address, you know, this full circle of not just the spiritual power of writing, the healing power of writing, but also the professionalized power of writing, also how you build friendships and community, also how you can do things within the prison, but also beyond the prison. So, after that year, I started putting it together, and actually, it's poignant to me in the aftermath of my mother's death. I found out, I think 2 days later, that I got a residency to go and really vision this book. And I had an instinct pretty quickly that this was going to be a much bigger book than the original, and that it was something we might actually be able to sell on market. And when I came back with a 30-page proposal, Haymarket Books immediately picked it up, and they've been a great partner since.
That's what's up. Give it up for Case and Nicole. That's definitely what's up. Definitely what's up. And I want to ask a follow-up question. I think you talked a little about it. What emotions did it bring up for both of you all to be through this journey in editing the book, writing your essay, and things like that?
I just got an email this morning about contributing to an anthology about crying, particularly around work in prison. So it's very interesting that you asked that now. I went through a bevy of emotions. You have to imagine that, you know, sometimes I was working with folks like Nicole where it was like, okay, here's a handful of edits, the essay's ready to go. But some of them were really a real journey with people that would call, you know, I got to give the full picture. I'd miss 5 phone calls from them. You can't call people in prison back. So finally getting, I read this in my intro, finally getting my friend Spoon on the phone and he's reading in his blues man voice this essay and I'm in the car. You nailed it, Spoon. So a piece of it was, the emotional journey was creative engagement, relationship, exciting, you know, in that kind of rigorous way. But I don't think I really absorbed the impact of going through this journey until I saw it in full and reread it. And I started to really understand that, oh, Thomas Bartlett Whitaker in the book who got off death row is still in administrative segregation. He's been severely punished by the system for writing about death row. He took a massive risk in writing for this book. I'll get calls from people saying, they're putting me in the hole for 2 months. You won't hear from me. You'll get my writing after that. So I started to feel humbled, overwhelmed, like it was a massive responsibility. And at the end of the day, creatively liberated, because if these are my mentors and teachers and they're working from this context, who am I to not expand in myself? Which is what I think this book can do for people who have nothing to do with prison, maybe don't have any connection, few and far between in this country, but it's a book that I think it instructs people on how to be creatively liberated.
And you get to see yourself as an expert of your own experience and life, particularly if you're just as involved through this book. If I can just go back a little bit, I met Kate's about a month after I was on felony probation. I had two probation officers, one in Cleveland where I committed my crime and another one in New York where I lived. And I was still very tender and under the terror of this new life. I had never been arrested before, never had a criminal record before this. And I met Kate's at a program that you put on through PEN America to celebrate the folks who were published in the anthology. There's an anthology that PEN America does every year, the Prison Writing Contest, where folks who submit and win get to be published. These are folks who are on the inside, folks who are incarcerated. And I don't know how I heard about the program, but I did, and I showed up and I met Kate's. And for the first time in what was about 5 or 6 months since I was indicted, I felt like I'd found my tribe. I felt like I could be somewhere and be a felon and not be ashamed and not be terrified. And so to see, fast forward, it's been 3 years. It was 2018. Wow, what is time? To see my work in this book that's a guide for people who are just as involved, but people also on the inside. I was never on the inside. I served probation. I want to be really transparent about that. It's not only humbling, but talk about like affirmation. Talk about the ability to see oneself after you've been invisibilized because of a label put on you. Right? There's nothing, I can't express to you in words how powerful that is. Just for the individual psyche. Oh, if I can do this, if I could have escaped the terror that I experienced when I first met this book's editor, to now feel the power of being in this book and helping others to establish writing careers or just writing as a hobby, writing as a form of expression, I can do anything. So yeah, I think that's how I feel. Kind of super powerful because of what Kate has put together.
Thank you. Yeah, that's definitely powerful. And I just, yeah, definitely want to bring it back to Nicole said and, you know, kind of bring it back to my experience. And I just think like me landing in this position as a moderator, me, you know, facing 45 years at one point, like 4 or 6 years ago, to being here. Being published, I've been a published author as well, and you know things like that. I definitely agree. Like being visualized as this worst person, and then sitting here today with these wonderful people. So, and just being able to heal in different ways, meeting great people. So, I definitely feel you, Nicole, and yeah, I think that's definitely powerful. I feel it in myself. So, I think just when Nicole, Case, and I were talking. Just about felons and, you know, expungement, being a felon, and wanting to expunge or do I want to be a felon? Do I want to go through the system and, you know, deal with expungement? And right now I'm actually trying to go through expungement and it was denied. Why? Because system, you know, the justice system is messed up. And just being able to do all these things, right, and them still saying, oh, 4 years ago you were this person, 6 years ago you were this person. But you're just able to still be a published writer, you know, things like that. So I want to bring that back to Nicole and, well, both of you all. What's in this book that writers could take from, authors could take from? Talk more about outlet expressions as well.
There's so much. There's so much in here to call on, and I tend to read the same two excerpts when I do talks because I think they give a little sense of, you know, you could, Michelle Alexander gave us a beautiful quote among many other authors, and, you know, what's not public, I'll fill you in. This made my life, of course. She wrote The New Jim Crow, if you're not familiar with the text that really shifted the conversation of mass incarceration in a major way. She said, I planned on skimming this book because I only had 2 weeks to read it, to blurb it. I couldn't put it down. It's one of the best books on writing I've ever read. So I think the reaction of this book being also an incredible craft book, you know, there's like the preeminent authors of the time, like tweeting, Leslie Jameson is tweeting underlines from the book. And when I see that, what moves me about it is exactly what Nicole was saying. People in prison have things to teach us about writing craft-wise, not just spiritually. But, of course, and we talk in spiritual terms a lot, there's a lot of spirituality in this book, and I think that that is one of its most profound offerings. So I'm going to read two excerpts, if that's all right, two paragraphs from the writers in the book. One is from Elizabeth Hawes, who's incarcerated in Michigan. And actually, Nicole, this was the event you came to. It was not that important, but that event was actually an event we created called Exposure on Writing in Prison, where we commissioned folks that we knew to write about how hard it is to actually write in prison, what you face in terms of often retaliation, censorship, and then, of course, what you're talking about emotionally. So that's what Elizabeth is speaking to here. She writes, every time a prisoner submits their writing into the public sphere, they are subjecting themselves to an audience who can easily look them up and be told a prosecutor's version of a story, true or untrue, about their conviction. This is in juxtaposition to all a prisoner desires, to put the past behind them, to lay low and quietly merge back into society, to reconnect with those they love in fresh circumstances. Writing as a prisoner ties their name to the label of felon. A prisoner must ask themselves, am I willing to put myself out there? To be possibly talked about again? To be judged again? And more importantly, is the story, play, poem, idea worth my vulnerability? Will people listen or judge? While all artists and writers question the value of their work and wonder who is viewing it and how it is being perceived, a prisoner who is an artist or writer always carries the added burden of having to apologize for their past or for a piece of their past or for one afternoon of their past or for 1 minute of their past. Gives me chills to read it still. And I should say, this book is, the foreword is by Reginald Dwayne Betts, Mitchell S. Jackson, the book. These are Pulitzer Prize winners, MacArthur geniuses, you know, who have justice involvement. Piper Kerman, who wrote Orange is the New Black, is in this book talking about how do you write ethically about people you know. Great essays. So there's some really heavy hitters and famous writers in here with justice involvement. And then there's some folks that, you know, you'll be introduced to. So I mentioned Thomas Bartlett Whitaker earlier, writes about death row and has been in, you know, administrative segregation for years when he's supposed to be in general population. In layman's terms, what that means is he's in solitary confinement when he's supposed to be in a housing unit. And when Thomas wrote for this, I was blown away when I got the essay, and it opens the Crafting a Writer's Life in Prison chapter. While there's a lot of instruction in this book about how I ordered my winning checkbook from prison in a contest, how I staged and wrote a play in prison, you know, how I did extraordinary things, he's like, let me tell you the drive you have to have to be a writer. He said, on the chain bus to Texas's death row, I met a fellow condemned prisoner named Shadow. Thrice weekly, he was sent to a medical facility for dialysis, and his transport was the one tasked with picking me up from the classification unit. Shadow had an execution date just a few months down the line. When I asked him how he was dealing with the end of his story, he shrugged and said he was ready to go. I've never forgotten his eyes. I didn't know exactly how a person could come to look so defeated, but I figured that the state was going to give me a master class on the subject. And they did. Over the course of my 11 years on the row, they killed 161 men. I knew them all and have not forgotten a single one of them. The state plopped me down in the middle of a whirlwind, and I saw it begin to sandblast the men around me. I saw it begin to wear me down as well. Almost for my first few weeks, registering, discerning, and observing seemed to represent the only moral form of self-defense available to me. The only way to save the inner core of my decency before these portions were ripped away, and that's really it. That's all that has powered my career such as it is since. I'm not particularly talented. I'm not really special. I'm just highly motivated. I am, for want of a better word, haunted.
Thank you for that. Thank you. Definitely thank you. We do want to leave time for Q&A, so I have one more question for Kate and Nicole. Just a story that has impacted you so much. I think I'll let Kate tell us more about this probably being something that has played a part in people's release and, you know, things like that. So one story, quickly, you could tell us, so we'll leave time for Q&A. About this just playing a part in releases or like impacted stories.
You've pulled me right to what I was going to talk about. Yeah. And well, we could talk a lot. I'm like, this done already? Okay.
Yeah, she gave me the 10-minute rule.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, there's a million stories, and what's really special about this is the Mellon Foundation funded 75,000 copies to be sent into prisons across the United States. So far, I think we've gotten 22,000 in. Huge process. So, yeah, if you can only, I mean, it blows my mind every time I think about it. Can't even get my head around that number. So I have a million, not a million, but I'm getting wonderful responses from folks inside. But what's really profound to me is that there are three writers in this book that are very important people to me that I've known for the last 5 years and worked deeply with, each of whom has spent over 3 decades in prison. Not because of this book, but absolutely because of writing. All of them have come home since this book came out in January. So writing really can play a part in getting people out of prison.
And I want to give the space to you, Nicole. Any impact?
I think that was the perfect way to end this. I do. Thank you.
For sure. Thank you all. And I just want to close out with, you know, when attention shifts where orgs or, you know, these books aren't a point anymore, a popular point. You know, we're still doing this work in real life. There's people still living in this injustice system every day. So please support books like these. Please support organizations like I talked about before. And encourage folks to write. Encourage folks to write. Let it be their outlet and healing. Like I mentioned before, I do healing circles. So that's a form of writing, hip hop, you know, things like that, or being a published author. So I definitely want to end with that. And yeah, just sustaining the attention to things like this because the system is injustice and we want to continue this fight. And I'll leave the floor for Nicole Case. Have anything else that you all?
I think anyone should pick up this book.
For sure.
Right? Whether you or not you're justice involved, whether or not you are teaching folks who are justice involved, if you yourself are a writer or interested in writing, this is a book for you.
I second that. I could talk all day about the book, but I think we have a Q&A opportunity, so I'll wait and see if anybody has a question.
So I'm an educator. I just moved here last year, but I was in California, and my best friend disclosed to me, because he was nervous about this, that he had spent 18 years in prison as accomplice to murder. Wrong place, wrong time. His friend was in a gang, did things he didn't know, and then helped with the escape. We celebrated his 10-year out last month, and he is a very different person than the person who went in, obviously. He was a man of color, inner city LA, but even with 10 years out, he puts himself in a position where he's made a lot of progress in trying to get back to not normal, but content. And he actually still goes and helps people that he knew inside because he was, I think it was Solano County in LA, which is also not really a great place. Not that any of them are, but a little notorious in California at least. And so he kind of finds himself arcing between more good with where he's at and being pulled back in by people who have just come out. And so for the two of you who have experienced the justice system from this side, how have you found yourself navigating having one foot in both places and knowing people that are still having that trouble on the inside and the way that it affects you versus where you're at now with all of the changes and growth and improvements that you've gone through since your experiences?
Yeah, that is a powerful question. It makes me think of your earlier question, Alicia, about expungement. It also makes me think about all the felons in my family and the people who are still incarcerated in my family who I'm constantly having to navigate with my relationship with because of my status as a felon. I don't know that that one can ever strike the perfect balance. What is the balance? I remember being on probation and being told I couldn't be around any other felons. Got a whole bunch of felons in my family. You know, I live in the hood. I live amongst a whole bunch of felons. Because poverty and criminalization are very much so tied together. And with race, so, you know, that wasn't a surprise to anyone. That for me, the hard part was like, how do I navigate not being around it? Like, how do you do that? And also, it brings me to thinking about, I hope I'm answering your question, this issue of expungement. I am privileged to have committed a crime in a state, in a jurisdiction that allows for sealing, not expungement. And expungement basically is you get to say it goes away. You never committed the crime. It gets completely wiped from your criminal record. Sealing, on the other hand, is it stays on your criminal record, but no one can see it except for like a law enforcement agency, right? I have a whole bunch of people in my family, people I love, who are unable to expunge their crimes, crimes that were poverty inspired, right? And so I'm right now in a very personal dilemma about, do I want to expunge? If I expunge, like, what does it mean to exact that privilege when others who I love cannot? But if I don't expunge, does that mean that I'm going to continue to have a hard time renting an apartment? Does that mean that I'm going to continue to have a hard time, and I'm not going anywhere anytime soon, Kate, but finding a job? Does it mean that I'm going to have a hard time when, you know, I'm trying to get second parent adoption for my kid who was conceived through in vitro fertilization with me and my wife? These are things you don't think about if you're not a felon. These are things you don't know about. I started an organization that's a 501c3 that does a lot of good work for us. But I found it really difficult to be insured because I'm a felon. So these are constantly the questions that I'm having to answer and the experiences I have to endure when figuring out, not when figuring out, when walking the tightrope of that balance.
For sure. I could talk about it a little bit. And I think, yeah, exactly what Nicole said. I think it's harder for some more than others. For me, I can say just getting out the neighborhood. I live way in the suburbs. I think that played a part, and that doesn't play a part. Most people want to stay in their neighborhood and still want to, you know, the resources and stuff like that. I think my other drive is my kids. I know that I need to be here for them. Also, I think restorative justice helped me a lot. I found the group Circles and Ciphers when I got out probably a week after. Not everybody gets that opportunity, though, but I did. And I think just going through meeting a lot of organizations and getting a job as a felon, facing all those years and stuff like that, played a big part in me being able to walk on the straight path, having support, being able to advocate for people that was once like me. And like I said, everybody don't have that opportunity. You know, it's really hard to find an organization. Circle Ciphers bumped into me. Like, my friend came, like, hey, come to this peace circle. You know, back in the day, I'm like, no, this is lame. I want to go to that. But it really played a part in being able to, yeah, and I still struggle. I still struggle. But I think all those things I talked about, you know, I just know that, you know, I want to be an advocate for other people like me. And, you know, I had to grow up. So that's me. And also the sealing and expungement. Like, you go to court, you're defeated. Oh, it's denied. Oh, well, I shouldn't have, you know, done it in the first place, you know. So just being able to, like, go to the judge and the court system again, which you don't want to do. You don't want to step foot in it. And being able to be knocked down and still be able to have courage to be like, okay, well, I won't let this defeat me and stuff like that. So that's my answer.
And even more like evidence of why folks need to be able to write about it and position to write about these experiences, because these aren't the experiences that you hear about. These aren't the experiences that make it to film through screenplays or whatever, right? We need more folks talking about like how pervasive, like after you've served your time, you know, after you've done what you were, you know, sentenced to do, and after you've changed your life 10 years later, you're still having to do these things.
If we have another question. This my twin, y'all.
Hello, hello, hello. It's beautiful to see y'all. First and foremost, I want to say thank you. This amazing body of work, and it's needed in our world right now. And I have a two-part question, but I'm going to ask the first one. So at Circle of Ciphers, we're an abolitionist-based organization, and I think something that sometimes happens when we're encountering people is that they're like, okay, I can't get past that this person has committed a crime, right? And this is all that they are, right? And so for someone that, you know, believes in the system, believes in how it's run, can't get past the idea that these people have committed crimes, et cetera, when they pick up this book, what kind of message do you think it could give them? And how do you think it can change their perspective?
What's your name?
Anne-Marie.
Anne-Marie?
Yeah.
Thank you for that question.
No problem.
It's a beautiful question. I think, you know, we talk a lot about how writing can give people their humanity and three-dimensionality back, and I think that absolutely. But something people say to me often is, and sometimes it's like public defenders. Mm-hmm. Like public defenders from Manhattan came to our show, and the head of the public defenders is a writer and a friend, and he said that they were saying this. People in prison can write like that? As if there isn't incredible talent behind the walls, as if it's not people with a variety of experiences, as if somehow having committed a crime means that you are, completely dehumanized. I mean, the system is dehumanizing, but there are brilliant humans, right? So I think first and foremost, you see that people have incredible stories to tell. And also, I think, transformation. Anybody who's ever taught in prison, that's my background. I mean, I've been with people who have done crimes that are gut-wrenching. I mean, really difficult to deal with. But I meet them 20 years into their journey, and they are an amazing person. So I think also understanding transformation, that people can change. And it's not because of the prison system, it's in spite of. And the grit and determination that these folks have to be like, I'm not going to stay on the yard all day. I'm moving away from the life I was in, and I'm going into myself. I can't imagine anybody who reads this book would think that our criminal justice system works.
Thank you so much. Powerful and on point. And then the second part question, super quick. I think one thing that you said was really powerful, Nicole, is that being able to write gave you a moment to feel that freedom, you know, of like what your life was before and then what it could be after. And I think whether you're a writer or not, being incarcerated inside, that is a powerful tool to have. So with this book, I guess, and just thinking about any future work, do you guys have any aspirations to kind of continue this work or continue to create space for people that are incarcerated to continue to write?
Well, it's just our jobs. You know, we do it every day. So one of the things we're doing with this book is we're not to brand them, but we're going to be working with incarcerated leaders or people who want to be leaders in 20 prisons across the U.S., building a curriculum around this book for incarcerated leadership to lead their own communities. The hope is that we're going to focus on programming deserts, because city-based prisons often have a lot of artists coming in, but you get out in the boondocks, whether Texas, Gatesville, there's six prisons on a strip. They got nothing. And so that's where we're going to really be looking at. People in prison can lead their own groups. There's a lot of romanticization. And I was a prison educator. I believe in it. Bringing the outside inside is life-giving for folks. But also we want to invest in people that are inside to lead their own efforts. And so that's something we're doing with the book. We're working on a project called the Incarcerated Writers Bureau, which is going to really be putting agents, editors, criminal justice reform experts, abolitionists in direct touch with writers so that they don't just come to me and say, Kate's Nicole, editors, Kate's Nicole, who should I pick? I'm like, let's professionalize this and provide this service. We have a 30-year ongoing mentor program that pairs working writers inside, you know, through the walls, 30-year prison writing contest that we do an anthology with every year. So we have a massive bevy of programs. So this is not the end, definitely not.
Thank you so much. I appreciate y'all so much.
Thank you for your work, too. When we were hearing about it, we were like, yes.
Hi. So my older brother is currently incarcerated. He got drunk and fought an MTA worker, which is like a felony. And it was also like his second time, you know, going back into the system. And so like now he's currently kind of, he's really hard on himself about that and feels that if he ever gets back out, you know, he's gonna like end up making another mistake and end up back in. What support systems would you recommend, like, for me and my extended family members to try and craft for him so that when he comes back out, he doesn't feel like he's, you know, a step away from committing a new crime?
First of all, it is a great question, and he's not wrong to be afraid. I'm afraid to say, you know, Nicole, Alicia could speak to this better than I, but parole violations could be anything. You know, you're late to your parole meeting. Oops, you're back in prison. You know, we know that. Knowing that you're in New York, because we connected earlier, you know, finding the reentry programs, Osborne, Fortune Society, tapping into community really is I think, how most of the folks I know have transitioned successfully, have had strong families, and they've been able to be in community with other people who share the experience. Not solely, because that's another silo, right? But it is important, and I hear the question about your friend too. People need to be next to other people who are grappling with the same things, I think. I don't know if you both have something to say.
No, I think that was spot on. Thank you for providing the list of resources. I would echo what Kate just said. And also, like, there are arts programs, you know, not necessarily that your brother is striving to be an artist, but again, a way of creative expression, a way of, like, healing and being in fellowship with folks with similar backgrounds and experiences. I'm more than happy to jump offline about it with you.
Hi, my goodness, thank you for being here. I didn't anticipate that this book would be at the festival, so I'm really glad that I came and saw it and that you're here speaking. I wear several hats working with writers in different aspects, but I recently took on a project to work with a man who's incarcerated, has been for 20 years and is out in like 5 years, and he really wants his memoir put together. So we've begun working together, but the biggest challenge is, as you probably know, it costs every time you email, and you're limited in the amount that you can email. And even when I've tried to send him mail of an article to read that's about writing memoir or whatever, it's come back to me several times. So that's one. I have like 1,000 questions that I would love to ask you, but I won't right here, but I'd love to connect with you after. But my biggest question is, how do I get a book to him? You mentioned that there are free books to prisons, and I have a nephew down in Texas I'd love to send it to, and I have this man in Wisconsin, and I mean, I'll send it anyway, but if there's an opportunity to do that.
Very simple answer. It will take a few months, so bear with us, because we have so many orders going out. If you go to pen.org/sentences-that-create-us, you will find a form you can fill out, or I can give you my email and I can send it to you. And what you're talking about is why this cover is butterflies made of mail, because that is how the work gets out of prison.
For sure. Thank you for all these questions. Thank you, Case and Nicole.
Thank you, Lisa.
It was great to meet you all and spend this time with you all. And thank you, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, best-selling author Amanda Flower discusses her mystery novel, Because I Could Not Stop for Death, an Emily Dickinson mystery. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.